Blessed be the darkness, the vast expansion, the all-encompassing, all-surrounding womb of space. Blessed be the light, the penetrating point, the all-focusing, all-aligning core of creation. Blessed be the blade that divides the darkness from the light, thus generating duality, and from duality is all substance formed. The cleansing by water, the purity of salt, combining together, so merged we exalt. By the blade that separates the darkness from the light, the babe from the mother, and the world of the living from the realms beyond, I conjure this circle as a sacred place, shifting the confines of time and space, an island apart and a fortress between yesterday's sorrow and tomorrow's dream. Blessed be the vessel wherein the divided may unite. That was an example of a drawing down in musical form. The question song, as performed by Pasha and the Pagans, words by Ian Corrigan, music arranged by Ian Corrigan, based on Twa Corby's. I am the lady of the starry heavens. I am she who is mother of all living things. My hands have modeled the mountains and poured the oceans upon the earth. I run the streams off the snow peaks and the rivers through green valleys. Every snowflake, every speck of soil or sand bears my imprint. I am in the smallest spark and the largest star and the vast ocean of space. I am the consoler of the saddened and the healer of the sick. I bring comfort to those upon the earth and peace and understanding in death. For I am the changing goddess. Forget not my darker side. Hidden in the deepest reaches of your mind, I have traveled to the underworld, and I have returned. Those who seek to know me, to feel my spirit, to win my favor and my grace, come to me with a sincere heart. Make offerings upon my altar. Listen and be still. I shall grant you what you ask and more. Wisdom and nobility of spirit. You shall not want for love or friendship, for I will make you beautiful in the eyes of those you desire. Nor shall you lack wealth, for I nourish the earth with the milk of my love. As your days of want are ending, know that I will be the desire that remains. Welcome to the Covening Podcast. In the last episode, you had the briefest of introductions to windblown traditional witchcraft, or as I prefer to call it, the old religion, and the details of our circle opening, which we will now use as our intro, as well as the quarter evoking and banishing, which we will forego today and most days due to time constraints. This podcast will cover a sample charge of the goddess, as you just heard, a sample charge of the horned god, and sample texts for invoking the goddess and the horned god. In addition, I will answer to the best of my ability the question that was asked of me about non-binary deity forms and non-binary honorifics for our clergy. And I will discuss sexuality and polarity as it was originally conceived by Gerald Gardner for covens and how it has morphed with coven generations. Most of the earliest sources that were researched by Gerald Gardner and others to create the Wiccan ritual format specifically excluded women. The early Catholic Mass, the early Kabbalists, the early Rosicrucians, and worst still, ancient texts translated prior to 1990 by white male archaeologists of European descent. They weren't just patriarchal. They were so blindly patriarchal that including women would have seemed as nonsensical to them as including monkeys. And there was a reason for this. To any observer who arrived here from another planet, it would be patently obvious that women are biologically gifted in ways that men are not. Women can birth children, can bring forth new life, can nurture and nurse children from our own bodies. All these religions that teach men that they are the superior ones do so in the face of the obvious evidence to the contrary, that God or the gods entrusted women and not men to carry the developing fetus, experience birth, and to nurture the newborn. Call it jealousy, call it an inferiority complex, the men in charge of the patriarchal religions and the old mystery schools excluded women so that men could continue to retain power and believe in their own superiority. Doreen Valiente wrote the first published Wiccan charge of the goddess. If you have not seen it before, you should definitely find it now. This unassuming, nerdy-looking poet and scholar collaborated with Gerald Gardner to put the spirit of the goddess into his craft. In the early generations of Wicca, there were many rules, or at least guidelines, around the intermingling of men and women, priests and priestesses. These rules fell apart within three generations, and as I describe them to you, you will easily be able to imagine why. Covens were conceived by Gardner to be similar to a nuclear family model, with a mother or high priestess, a father or high priest, and children or coveners. The eldest daughter, the female covener who was closest to obtaining her third degree, became the handmaiden, or mother's helper, or surrogate mother when mom was not available. With exceptions for specific topics, teaching was supposed to occur from the high priestess to the male coveners and from the high priest to the female coveners. The high priest was supposed to take the lead for the female coveners' initiations, and the high priestess was supposed to lead on the male coveners' initiations. Within the circle rituals, participants were supposed to stand next to each other, alternating sex, female, male, female, male. Covens strove to have an equal or near equal number of male and female participants. The idea was that males and females had different energetic polarity, and that if all the males were at one side of the circle and all the females at the other side, then that energy would have more drag or friction and would not be able to flow as evenly. There are covens and traditions that still adhere to this as well as possible. The drawing down of the goddess was performed by the high priest into the high priestess, who then spoke the charge of the goddess, and the drawing down of the god was performed by the high priestess into the high priest, who then spoke the charge of the god. Windblown continues this tradition as much as practical. Everybody who was an initiate was supposed to be heterosexual or at least bisexual with a preference for the opposite sex. Windblown does not discriminate. Lord Hades was a third-degree New York Welsh high priest and my partner for almost 7 years. But he preferred Norse Aesir paganism, Zoroastrianism, Gnosticism, and Crowleyism, that is, Thelemic OTO, to any kind of Wicca, which he characterized as kindergarten. In other words, he eschewed goddess-oriented witchcraft. In our early days together, he functioned as high priest for the Ravens of Ravenna. But as time wore on, he became less and less helpful. So what was I supposed to do with my coven? Traditionalists gave me two choices. Choice number one was to find a high priest from my same tradition or a compatible or reciprocal tradition and have him attend my circles as high priest. The qualified high priests were already engaged with their own covens on Sabbats and Esbats. Choice number two was that we could merge the covens, but then Windblown would lose our identity, being swallowed up by a high priestess and a high priest of a different tradition, which was what the traditionalists wanted anyway, because they resented that I had not been given the same vows of secrecy that they had, and they didn't like the idea of Windblown growing. Basically, I would eventually need to be initiated into a tradition that would force me into vows of secrecy, and that would solve their rogue witch queen problem. So that was one obvious problem. How could I lead a traditional coven without a high priest? Well, I did find a tradition-compatible high priest when it came time for initiations. But other than that, I led the group on my own or with the help of my second-degree male coveners. I should also mention that I meditated long and hard on the issues of sexuality and polarity and gender, and I came to the conclusion that there was no reason to refuse initiation, elevation, or graduation based on either sexual preference or sexual identity. It took me 4 years in the 1980s of thinking deeply about the subject to be certain enough that I was willing to act on my decision and defend it. But I did get there, and once there, I didn't waver. In addition, where I once held that a coven must have at least one biologically birthed female member to be a valid windblown coven, I am now willing to make that a guideline rather than a hard and fast rule. Windblown covens, however, must continue to be goddess-oriented in order to remain in the windblown tradition. Since I am a traditionalist and somewhat of a reconstructionist, and because in spite of seeing my seventh decade on Earth, I engage with much younger people, I have been asked, are there any non-binary god forms or deities, and how do we contact them? Windblown is a teaching tradition. We have checklists for each degree. Although I created my own checklists from scratch, I have Blue Star to thank for that idea. When you have completed the work for the degree, you have qualified yourself for the initiation. Towards the end of the second degree, as you are preparing for graduation, if you have not already identified the deities and pantheon you will be working with, you need to research that. You may use the same ones as your current coven, if you are so inclined. But Windblown encourages you to bring forth what is right for you. Just before your third degree initiation, you will lead our coven in a complete ritual of your own creation with your own pantheon. Until that time, when in coven circles, you conform to the pantheon chosen by the ritual leaders. Of course, you can suggest to your ritual leaders that they try calling a different specific deity within a ritual. It is better to make that suggestion at a time when your leaders can mull it over for a while. In other words, not immediately preceding an imminent ritual, and certainly not while inside that circle ritual, unless you are invited to do so. Your ritual leaders can be addressed as Lady or High Priestess, Lord or High Priest, or using the non-binary honorific Elder. Please address them as they prefer. If they indicate that either works for them, you may address them as you prefer. Same rule as for your pronouns. Good coven leaders will find ways to accommodate coveners who have particular needs that are beyond what was originally anticipated, especially if the covener is sincere, dedicated, and willing to make some compromises or adjustments. Let me restate that. I can't think of a single covener that I had who did not in some way inspire or urge me to make some changes within our checklists or our rituals to accommodate their special needs. And Windblown is the richer for it. But back to your question. Are there non-binary deities, and how do you call them? I need to throw that question back at you. In your pantheon, the one that you will lead when you become elder, are there non-binary deities, and how do you call them? Certainly, when you set up your home altar, you should start calling them to familiarize yourself with them. Yazilikaya in Turkey is an inscribed rock, or rather, a rocky outcropping with passageways. On one side, there is a line of gods, and on the other side, there is a line of goddesses. The great god and the great goddess each lead their respective lines and face each other where the two lines meet. In the line of the gods, there is one goddess, Shaushka, the Hurrian Ishtar. In the line of the goddesses, there is one god, Sharuma, the son of the great goddess. Of course I couldn't let this opportunity pass without a reference to Hittites. So yes, there are at least gender-bending historical deities from almost every pantheon. You may have to dig for them. Finding them will get easier, but the reason it may be difficult at first, particularly in older texts, has to do with the comprehensive patriarchal submersion of the early European archaeologists and anthropologists who could not see beyond their own cultural indoctrination. If I might digress a moment to illustrate, here's a quote. The Hirbet Kurok people moved en masse with their wives and children. page 32 to 33 from A Forgotten Kingdom, copyright 1953. That travesty was authored by Sir Leonard Woolley, a British archaeologist best known for his excavations of Ur in Mesopotamia. Let's just unpack that sentence for a bit. The Kirbet Kurok people did not have husbands, but they did have wives. Apparently, the wives themselves were not Kirbet Kurok people, but they were owned by them, as were the children. That sentence could have been written, the Kirbet Kurok people moved en masse as a people, all ages and sexes, or even male and female, young and old. So ingrained was Sir Leonard Woolley's patriarchy and heteronormativeness that from the archaeological evidence that the people all traveled together, he could only imagine that they were men with wives and children, and that the males had made the decision to move, and that they took along their families because they were the masters. One has to wonder if there were any widows or unmarried adult women in the Kirbet Kurok peoples at all. Also, I'm not entirely certain what kind of cultural structure they had surrounding family bonding. Were there marriages? Did husbands become fathers? Or was the father role provided by the mother's brother? Or was the family unit structure something different entirely? To be clear, we are talking about early Bronze Age, between 3000 and 2000 BCE, so Sir Woolley made bad assumptions. Back to my point. If Sir Woolley couldn't recognize that women were people, but thought of them as auxiliary people or co-people rather than as the backbone of humanity, do you think he would be able to recognize a non-binary deity? Hermes and Baphomet are both clearly mixed gender. But what do the textbooks call them? So, if you want to learn about goddesses, gods, and other images of the divine or spirits or the priesthood from translations of ancient archaeological texts, please do so. But keep in mind that many of the early scholarly authorities, particularly the ones who were white and male, were unable to see beyond their own prejudices. Gerald Gardner did not invent the great mother goddess. She is ubiquitous. But he did recognize her at a time when most scholarly archaeologists and anthropologists were unable to recognize her or her importance. As late as the 1990s, it was still being taught in some universities that in all known mythologies, the gods were always more prominent and powerful than the goddesses. Not true. Here are some examples of invocations and charges. I deliberately kept them short and wrote what I thought would make them easy to memorize, as I have a strong preference for memorization or even improvisation, rather than reading scripts. I have replaced the names of the gods with honorifics. You may insert your own names for the gods when you are using these texts. Great Mother Goddess, who meets the midnight full with magic dark and power bright, who greets each moon in threefold form, nearest source of heaven's light. Maiden, mother, crone, silver lady beckoning nigh, shine your mirror on our circle. We draw you as you pull the tide. By our sacred covenant old, lady, hag queen, dark and cold, lady, maiden of the night, lady, mother, full and bright, mother, at your fullest wheel, to all assembled, yourself reveal, and join us in our covening. Goddess, take our priestess's form, and be her on this sacred night. Her lips your kiss, her tongue your speech, her eyes your sight, her arms your reach. We greet you, great lady, the circle is thine. For the dark moon, change only one line. change Mother at Your Fullest Wheel to Crone Queen of the Darkened Veil. The invocation of the goddess is usually spoken by the high priest as he draws down the goddess into the high priestess. The traditional pentacle is made of copper, or at least polished metal, so that it can act as a mirror onto the face or the body of the high priestess. If you are lucky enough to have a hill or a rooftop or a beach or some other place with an unencumbered view of the full moon, the high priest positions himself to face into the full moon, and the high priestess faces the high priest. That means the high priest will be facing approximately southeast, or south at midnight, and the high priestess will be facing approximately northwest in order to catch the light of the moon as reflected by the pentacle. Alternatively, the high priestess may face into the full moon directly. If the moon is not visible, these issues do not apply. While the high priest recites the invocation, he faces the high priestess and touches her with either the pentacle or the tip of his wand. The wand is usually for dark moon, in an evoking earth pentagram pattern. In other words, her forehead, her right leg just above the knee, her left shoulder or arm, her right shoulder or arm, her left leg just above the knee, her forehead, and then finally finishes at her heart. We used to use the feet instead of knees, but we are getting old. During this time, the high priestess may either be standing in the Egyptian dying god position or the star goddess position. But once the high priestess starts speaking as the goddess, she generally assumes the star goddess position. The exact same features with the roles reversed are used for invoking the horned god. Similarly, either the pentacle or the wand will work for the invocation. In the earlier forms of Wicca, all men present would kneel during the charge of the goddess, and all women present would kneel during the charge of the god. The idea was that men were recognizing the spark of the goddess in all assembled women, and vice versa. In my mind today, the spark of the god and the goddess are present in all people. Therefore, in all your rituals, do what feels right to you. For all windblown rituals, it is preferable that the parts be memorized in advance. But if you are in the process of memorizing, it is acceptable to do the speaking part first and the gestures afterwards if that makes it easier for you to learn. Here is an example of calling the horned god. Lord of the leafy green, Lord of the lion's mane, protector of the small, Lord of the sabbat flame, by our sacred covenant old, signed in blood, red and bold, wielder of the double blade, in your name our oaths are made. In the wild your hooves abound, your playful leaps the rules confound, and we are baffled in your light. Steer your wagon to our right. Land upon your hallowed priest, hear our chants, attend our feast, and join us in our covening. Horned one, take our high priest's form and be him on this sacred night. His lips your kiss, his tongue your speech, his eyes your sight, his arms your reach. We greet you, great Lord. The circle is thine. And here is a charge of the horned god. I am Lord of the fertile earth. I am joy. I am laughter. I am grain and grape and all the pleasures of this world and all the worlds beyond. I hold the keys to all the mysteries. I am the Lord of wisdom and magic. I sail through the sky in my crescent boat of golden haloed horn. I am the bull of force and strength, the flash of lightning, the crack of thunder. I am the light of the moon and stars, the restless prowling of creatures at night in dark piney woods, and the view of the sky from an open hill. I have planted and plowed the fields. I have sired the kid and the calf. I break ground with green shoots in spring. I rut the cow and the lioness, the ewe, the sow, and the gazelle. You who are so solemnly gathered, my worship is of the flesh. Drink your fill and feast in my honor. Make music, make love, fill yourself with life. So shall you come to know death, for this also is mine. In death, all souls are equal. Life is for beneficence, pleasure, and will. That concludes our second episode of the Covenant Podcast by me, Lady Sitara. Please subscribe. Upcoming episodes will include information about how to raise energy and ground it, the Cone of Power, and the Great Rite. And of course, we shall also be celebrating the Sabbats, the Quarters, the Cross Quarters, and the Espots, the Moons. A couple of quick shout-outs. The Pacific Northwest Witches Market, that's PNWWITCHESMARKET.com. And the Witches and Brews Book Club, which is a meetup group for women and non-binary folks. Thank you. By the blade that cleaves the darkness and light, the babe from the mother, and the world of the living from the realms beyond, I carve a tunnel to the mortal realm. As common persons, we are masked until the circle be recast. Sacred ground remain unseen. Silence rules the worlds between. Till next we answer magic's call and meet together, witches all.